This is Series 3 of Brave New Girl podcast, and I'm Lou Hamilton, author and illustrator of Brave New Girl, How to Be Fearless, and I welcome you to the stories of real-life Brave New Girls who are creatives, founders, campaigners, health practitioners, and thought leaders who are making a positive impact in the world. This week's guest is Christine McKay, founder of Salamandra, an award-winning animation company working B2B, building on ever-evolving technologies from stop frame to virtual reality, but with brand story and visual problem-solving always center stage. A forerunner for women in the field, she's changing the landscape in a historically male-dominated world. Welcome, Christine, to Brave New Girl podcast. Hi, Christine. How are you?
I'm great, Lou. Thanks for having me on today.
Yeah, it's really exciting to have you. And I love the ukuleles in the background. You're obviously in a music room. We were talking earlier about the joy of ukuleles. It's impossible to be sad around a ukulele, isn't it?
I totally agree. It's a lovely sound and something that's easy to pick up. So it's something my children learnt at school. And at least they can play a few chords and still sing along to something, which is quite lovely.
Yeah, and you can take it to the pub and play there.
You can indeed. I haven't tried that one.
We used to do that every week. We'd a load of us would go and sit and play instruments around a table, and I attempted a bit of ukulele.
Oh, that's lovely.
Yeah, it was great. Really good fun.
That is quite cool. They do that a lot in Brazil, because Brazilian music is obviously very how shall I say, special to Brazil. And most people know a lot of songs. And so, you know, you go past these lovely bars and there's people with their guitars and flutes, and everyone's just, you know, as you're walking past, you join in the song as well. It's lovely. It's really, really special.
Yeah, love it. So has there been much music and joy in your pandemic? How has that been for you this last year?
It's been pretty up and down, like for most people. I think we were very lucky as a company that we were already used to working with two offices, one in Eton, one in Dundee. So we kind of, because we work very collaboratively between the two offices, we were quite used to working in a sense remotely, really, because we have our stand-up meetings in the morning and our rushes in the evening. And we did that electronically between the two offices. So although we all we actually started working from home a few days before the first lockdown. So we kind of were prepared in a sense, because we could see it looming. And thank goodness, we've been jolly lucky that something like animation, which is what we do at Salamandra, is something that can be worked on remotely and is still in high demand, because particularly, and as you'll know, Lou, you know, filming wasn't allowed. You couldn't get, you know, crews together for good reason, of course. And so, you know, creating animations instead of, or, you know, at the same time as existing film footage is a great way around that. So, you know, we talked earlier on as well about storytelling. Animation is for business is a great way to get that storytelling across. And then if you have got a storyline through any kind of messaging, it's so much easier to remember. And if you've got visuals, then even easier. So, yeah, so it's been kind of topsy-turvy. We had clients who were a little bit like deer in the headlights at first. Everything stopped and everyone sort of took a bit of a breather. But, you know, we have been pretty busy. In fact, I've been extremely lucky. We've increased our turnover, and we've increased our size by 66%. So it's been, you know, very blessed, really. But I'm very lucky to have an amazing team. So, yeah, the Dundee office has doubled in size, and we've also grown in Eton as well. So that's been great.
And the beauty of animation is that we watch it on our screens, don't we? And so, you know, I think that some drama did manage to sort of keep going, but mostly films and documentaries certainly sort of just ground to a halt. But with animation, you know, you're making it on a computer on screens, and you're viewing it on screen, so that could continue, couldn't it?
Yeah, in fact, they've been clamoring for content for the last year, whether that be businesses or you know, channels, whether it be Netflix, Amazon, even BBC, etc. And particularly children's content, because of course, you know, the children are at home, they need either some kind of educational piece or something to entertain them, something to alleviate the poor parents who are trying to do both child caring and working, which my two are late teens, so early 20s. So I'm quite lucky in that sense. But yeah, having to do that is a bit of a nightmare. And we've got asked to do, you know, children's stuff, children's series and children's content. And we actually kind of won a couple of awards on that, which is really fantastic too. And we're even getting now pulled into doing gaming work, which we haven't done before. So not the development, but sort of the marketing sizzles and the some of the cinematic stuff within the games, which is fantastic. We really love it. It's great fun. So we get to diversify from, you know, just the B2B stuff, which has been our main focus to date.
When we were little, we were sort of able to kind of do claymation if we had the opportunity. So you'd kind of make things in plasticine and then you'd take a photograph, one frame, and then you'd move the plasticine creature like a fraction, and then you'd take another photograph, and then you'd move it a fraction, and you take another frame. So incredibly, incredibly time intensive. We will talk later about sort of the development of Salamandra and animation. But I just wonder how, you know, you going back to you in your childhood, were you always interested in animation, in watching animation, or were you artistic, or what was the sort of kind of roots of all of this?
It's funny you mentioned that sort of claymation stuff, because it's something my daughter did a lot of and quite successfully. I was quite amazed. She did all the voiceovers and everything. But I think that's more in this generation where it's much more technical and easier to set up cameras and all that kind of stuff. We didn't have any of that stuff growing up. I grew up in the country and in amongst woods in Portugal, of all places, had a French education, so quite different in that sense. But what I absolutely loved was storytelling, and my sister and I used to play and make up different worlds. And, you know, imagination is such an incredibly rich thing that when we got called to dinner, for example, it was like such a jolt back into reality. I still remember that feeling. It's awful because you're there and it's very exciting and this, you know, incredible adventure that's going on. And, you know, we'd sort of have all these roles and everything. And it's just incredibly charming and very much part of that. And we were quite lucky in the sense that although Portugal didn't have much local TV, it had lots and lots of foreign TV. So whether it be Japanese, Italian, Russian, what have you. And because everything was subtitled, it actually tuned you into language because none of it was dubbed. But you learnt to understand what was going on. And sort of one of the things that was an animation called Marine Boy, and my sister and I both fell in love with this character, a cartoon character. How embarrassing is this? And we used to fight over him. You know, he's my boyfriend. No, he's not my boyfriend. And
I'm sure he'd be happy to have both of you.
Well, it's a cartoon character. But anyway, he was very special because he could swim underwater, eat special algae, and then breathe underwater, had a dolphin as a friend. I mean, what's not to like? I think there was a mermaid thrown in there as well. But very, very good, very exciting. And I think I've always been a very visual person, and I love when something is easily absorbed visually, whether it's a beautiful painting or beautiful illustration, or, you know, even something in a magazine, a lovely photo shoot of a fashion, you know, experience in some, I don't know, gorgeous gardens or something. All that kind of stuff really sort of lights me up. I find it incredibly, almost moving sometimes. And of course, cartoons is a great way of doing that. I think that we are quite a creative family. We did, my mother was a concert pianist. My aunt was an opera singer. We've got creative sides and both on my husband's side as well. And so our kids are quite creative too. And I think having that sort of background makes you open to, I suppose, viewing beauty in whatever format, whether it's auditory or visually or just, you know, I mean, I, for example, I love Ballet Rombert. If I go and watch them, I actually sit on the edge of my seat and I just get goosebumps all the way through the production because it's just spectacular. And that's visual, again, visual music and movement and all those kinds of things. So that sort of really speaks to me. And I did see, so I've traveled around quite a bit and I came back to the UK. I did see that there was a bit of a gap in the market with getting messages across. Because, you know, business messages can be so boring. People immediately associate business messages as, you know, talking to business. But actually, we're talking to people and it should be less B2B. And nowadays with the pandemic, it's very much more H2H, human to human. And that's one of the things I've really loved about the pandemic, if you can love anything, is the fact that we've all become a lot less smoke and mirrors and a lot more genuine, a lot more caring and taking the time and all that old-fashioned humanness that we used to have that, you know, because we're all so busy, we don't have time for. I think the pandemic has made us stop and think and, you know, because I suppose there's a fluidity between home and work anyway, that those things kind of get mixed up too in the way we approach and communicate with everybody. And I think that's lovely, and I hope we don't lose that. It is what makes us human, and you know, we do as we're gregarious as a species, and we do love to communicate, and I particularly love to communicate visually. So I hope that answers your question.
It's one thing sort of having the idea, a brilliant idea, and then quite another deciding that, yes, I'm going to start an animation company. Did you have anything in your toolbox that could help you start that? Had you already created other businesses? Did you have kind of contacts in the animation world? You know, with the idea and then this kind of landscape in front of you, what was there for you to kind of pick up with tools to move forward into that?
Well, I had actually started Salamandra in South Africa when I'd driven across Africa with an old boyfriend and ended up in South Africa for a bunch of years and started Salamandra there. But it was more of a sort of comms design agency at the time. And then we went over to New Zealand and I kind of fell in love with animation there. I met one of my friends, still runs a very successful animation company. They're primarily more in advertising and entertainment, you know, filmmaking rather than the B2B, which is what we do. Having done that before, I guess, it wasn't quite so daunting. But what was daunting coming back to the UK is I had been expatting for over 20 years. So coming back to the UK, it's like a complete standing start. So what I did do is I reached out to all my networks around the world to find skills that I could use kind of remotely, if you like. I did that until I could organically find the right people within the UK, well, within my office to build that up. So it was a kind of a slower process. First couple of years were quite tough, I have to admit. But after that, it sort of kind of grew exponentially.
What were those challenges when you first started?
Threefold. Getting the clients, convincing them to use us, getting the skilled sort of team together, and getting funding. Funding was quite hard to get. I spent a lot of time trying to do that. It's a complete waste of time. So I actually ended up just growing organically. And I wondered with hindsight whether it was because, you know, a lot of people say it's much harder for female entrepreneurs to get funding. And I wondered whether that was the case. I can't, you know, prove one way or the other, but it certainly wasn't easy. And it led to nowhere, which was very disappointing, to be fair. So I find other ways. It means I am quite, I will find my way out of difficult situations.
Resourceful.
Resourceful, that's the one.
And so animation historically is a very male dominated world. So you as a founder, as a woman, stepping into this field, how was that for you? And also how was it hiring people? Because was it mainly male animators that were coming out of university? And has that changed over the time that you've been building Salamandra?
I think it is a male dominated industry, absolutely. But I have worked in various industries and they have been very male dominated. So I wasn't unused to it. Doesn't make it right, but I just sort of got on with it. I'd say that there are many male animators rather than female animators. And I've employed people on merit, but actually we are female dominated. So we're kind of against the curve, really, the fact that it's a female founded and led company and we are majority female is wonderful. And it's not something I've particularly contrived because I do employ on merit. But we do have a very special culture in the company, which we've built as a team. And it's very supportive culture. And it's probably more sort of because it is so supportive and, how shall I say, again, back to the word human, I think it's probably more veering towards a female approach rather than male approach. We don't really do egos, we don't do divas, and that I think sets us very much apart from other agencies. I've worked in the past and been extremely unhappy in a couple of agencies, won't mention any names, where it was awful, where it really was backstabby, very just terrifying, really, where you could literally walk in and smell the fear. It was awful. And I always promised myself that I'd create something that was the antithesis of that. And hopefully I have. But yeah, I think we are still in a man's world when it comes to this industry, but it doesn't faze me as much because I think it's just as important for men and women to be successful. And I think that, you know, women probably just have to have a bit more gumption, and whether that's fair or unfair, you know, that's for another conversation. But I think that we just have to get on with it. And women are pretty good at that, just rolling up their sleeves and getting on with it.
And as a leader in an organization, how do you actually create the kind of culture that you want to create? And I mean, obviously, you know, you're going to be hiring people that you think are going to fit into that culture. But how do you ensure that is maintained? Because, yes, as you say, you know, we're, you know, humans interacting and trying to get the best out of humans. But humans also do have another side to them. All of us have another side to us that can be triggered under stress, or, you know, when we're trying to sort of hit a deadline, or, you know, maybe feeling that we're not doing as well. So how do you manage those sort of natural feelings that people have and the way that they sort of express them, either them just themselves or with each other?
One of our credos is in Salamandra UK is that there's no such thing as a stupid question, and everybody gets a voice. So, for example, when a brief comes in, everyone gets to learn about it. They can suggest approaches or ideas, and that's where the best ideas come from. And they're not necessarily from the animators either. That means everybody. That means, you know, the people on client management and, you know, admin side, as well as the creative. So that's really important. I think that everyone feeling valued and their opinions feeling valued are really important. And giving everyone sort of that voice is quite important. And also we do things like lunch and learns, where we teach each other stuff. And it could be anything from presentation skills to origami. I mean, it really is. It's just a way. I think it's very important to get everyone experienced in public speaking, because it doesn't matter whether you use it in work. You might use it at a wedding, or just, you know, speaking to your kids or whatever the case is. I think that's a very important attribute to have, and to feel comfortable to do that. And by having that voice and doing it in a safe space within your team, then it can build confidence that way. We also have regular, what we call performance reviews, but it's kind of check-ins in a sense. So we have them every 6 to 8 weeks, and with a view to, so that there's not something at the end of the year that everyone absolutely dreads and it is completely unrelated to what's actually happened in the year, etc. It happens on a regular basis. I have one-on-ones with everybody at least every 2 weeks, and they can be a 10, 15, half an hour conversation, and about anything, just to get to know people. And as you grow as well, I think that's really important, because you can quickly lose track of people and what's happening in their, you know, personal lives. Obviously, what they want to share, nothing, you know, it's just about sort of understanding what their circumstances are, and if they're happy or if they're looking to do something else. We are very big on training. So we're not a huge company, so we can't send people on massive, expensive training, but we do when we can. And that training can be also shadowing people. It can be, if you're sort of a novice, then it could be doing the same job as somebody else and then comparing at the end. And your job may not be going to client, but you will have had all the experiences of working on a client project. So it's about that support, the safe support. So in the evenings, we have rushes. So we share what we've worked on for the day. That way you can get sort of feedback. It's usually been sort of signed off or had a sort of glance by the line manager, but at least so that there's no sort of, you know, glaring mistakes or anything like that. But again, it's about, most of the time people go, oh, that's amazing. Oh, that's really good. I really like that. I like that in angle, or have you tried this? Or how about using this? And it's very, as I say, it's really supportive. It's not, there's no sort of beating people down. It's building people up, I guess. And because everybody does it, and people see it when they join, they see that as well. And it's not a them and us attitude either. It's we are a team. And, you know, if anybody's unhappy about anything, then they put their hand up or they talk to whoever they want to talk to. It's all about communication at the end of the day, I suppose.
I've been reading a couple of books by the same author, Greg McCowan, Essentialism and Effortless. And he talks about in work how important it is for individuals to be really, really clear about their role and what they're expected to do within that role. And because it's clear, they feel more able to kind of be creative within that role and expand that role. And it sort of fits really nicely with the next person and the next person, because everyone knows what, this sounds wrong, but knows their place.
Yep.
Or rather feels comfortable in their own kind of growth and development within that role. So is that something that you look at? Do you feel like each person is very clear about what they're doing and what their bit is contributing to the bigger picture?
Yes. So on these reviews, we talk about what the role entails, what's worked well, what hasn't worked well, what needs development, what development is needed from a training perspective in those reviews. And we've also done succession planning for everybody. So that means that you explain what you do in your role. Like, for example, if you were to be promoted, which we obviously want to do internally, then whoever succeeds you needs to understand what that role encompasses. But it's a really good exercise as well to understand what you do and from a day-to-day basis as well, what are the shortcuts, what are, tips on doing something better, those kinds of things. And it's great because if somebody goes on leave or what have you, then we've got all those things that are at our fingertips. It might be, I don't know, newsletters that they read, or it might be software that they use, or all those kinds of things. So we have got succession plan in place. And that's sort of to your point about knowing where you slot in, that kind of helps with that exercise too. You know, I'm very behind supporting people to do what they want to do. One of our creators as well is one that Richard Branson uses, which is something along the lines of train people to allow them to leave you, but treat them in such a way that they don't want to. And that's kind of what we try and do as well. So we've had people joining us who maybe have come in as, say, graphic designers, but they've wanted to get into animation. So we've allowed them to do that, train them and given them free rein to do work towards that. And we've got some very successful animators through that. And it's kind of learning and listening to what people want to do. And even if, for example, it might be something we can't offer, we can at least give them the opportunity to work within the realms of where it'll lead them to that. And even if they have to leave, hopefully they'll come back having learned something different. I mean, that's kind of the mentality behind that. Because I definitely believe that if people are continuously learning, they won't get bored. And that goes to me too, because I'm very, very easily bored. But I do love learning. I love learning about new stuff and new tech and new ideas and new, images and businesses and what have you. So that's what sort of keeps me ticking. And I think what keeps most creatives ticking is learning and trying new things. We're constantly experimenting. We've experimented and now are offering a lot of work within this augmented reality and virtual reality world. But we're also working in softwares which very excitingly allow you to view and interact in real time with animation, so that you can watch something and change the outcome, whether it's visually or language wise or what have you. It's really, really exciting, and the possibilities from a sort of business perspective are pretty much endless. So it's stuff like that gets us really excited, and we talk about it internally. We see, okay, would this work? Is this something we want to try? And then you should see the light that goes on in people's eyes. Oh my God, yes, I want to try that game. Let me have a go. So yeah, we're constantly experimenting in that sense, and that does keep us all very, very enthused.
You sort of have two areas to be looking at, don't you? Because the technology is changing all the time and developing, and who knows where it's going? Even in the next few years. I mean, if you look at how it's changed in the last few years, it's all changing so quickly. So you have this side of sort of expansion in terms of the actual product, in terms of the capability, about imagining sort of things that can sort of happen in a way that you couldn't have made happen before. Yeah. And then you also have the side of expanding the business. So how do you sort of manage both of those kind of concepts of sort of expansion and growth? And do you have a vision for, well, obviously on the technology side, you don't know where that is going to lead. So, I guess you just follow whatever the technology kind of throws at you. So first of all, sort of how do you have a vision for what the company is going to look like?
We already work internationally. We've got clients all over the globe, many of which we've never met, which in our industry is quite cool, actually. So we do want to grow that, and we do have ideas of two further offices or hubs, if you like. Can't really tell you the destinations yet. Keep that under the hood. But yes, but at the same time, we don't want to become like this great big massive agency, because I think you lose some of that lovely humanness and sort of teamwork. But what, and that's why we want to create these hubs of offices, if you like, where, you know, they each grow to around, I don't know, 10 or so size, and then they can be self-sufficient, but also work in the bigger sphere. So that's kind of our planning. I think with regards to technology, yes, we've always got a finger on the pulse as to what's going on, and when we have time to experiment in those areas as well, because I do think that it's very important to keep a pace. And it's very exciting. I have to stop the guys. No, guys, we've got work to do. But it's quite cool. So yeah, we're jolly lucky to work in this industry.
Does it tend to be client led? So they go, well, what we want is this on a massive scale, projected into a stadium. You then have to kind of work out what you can do and what technology is available. Or are you the ones that are pushing the envelope and then persuading the clients?
I think it's a bit of both. I think clients come with us with an idea, and then we might push back and say, but have you thought about it doing this way? And then they go, oh my God, that sounds amazing, let's go for that. So yeah, we are always trying to be a bit different. We want to really support our clients to stand out and to get their message across. At the end of the day, you know, we're all time poor and got so much stuff to absorb. And the other day, you know, we're lazy. So if we can absorb stuff faster and for the, you know, the brand owners in a memorable way, then why not use, you know, moving images in whatever format? But you're quite right. Things like, you know, multi-screen presentations in massive conferences and making those hybrid with, you know, a green screened, animated background, crazy stuff. We've done that. And we used to do it in the real world, in proper, you know, international conferences for clients in multi-screens. I think the biggest we ever did was 18 screens where each screen is doing something different, and it's still clickable like a presentation. So that was a bit of a crazy thing to do. And our guys are still to this day, don't know how they did it, but using a PowerPoint platform as the clickable platform, not the animations are all ours, but they created a fake hologram across five screens, including the stage. I don't know how they did it, but it looked amazing. So it's about stuff like that. So as we're doing projects, we'll come up with ideas and we'll say, hey, we're going to try this. Are you okay with that? And the clients are usually very excited about it, especially when they win awards around there. They're even more excited. But because we want to add value to our clients, we kind of see, well, what are they trying to do? What's the challenge? Who are they talking to? And then we'll go away and think about it. And then we'll come back with some suggestions. And sometimes it can be something incredibly simple and it may not include animation. You know, normally there is some way for us to go back and maybe challenge them on what they've suggested. Sometimes very straightforward, and sometimes we might come up with something completely different and something they will go for. So, as I say, a bit of both. But we've always got our two hats on. We've always got a business hat on and our creative hat on. So we know that marketing spend is finite and it has to have a return on investment. So we're always thinking about that. You know, we're always asking clients, what's your call to action? What do you want people or viewers to do? You know, and sometimes I haven't even thought about that, but it could be something as simple as having the URL, your website at the end, or it could be, you know, call this number or, you know, fill in this form, or whatever the case is. But we do wear our business hat because we want long-term relationships with our clients and we want to help them. We want to make their sort of process and their marketing and their sales better and to get their message across in a memorable way.
You're all loving what you do and you're passionate and it sort of is got purpose in there. And, you know, I can see that sort of, I can imagine the kind of whole team just kind of buzzing with these projects. But, you know, there are, you know, as you say, there are time constraints, there's money constraints, there are deadlines. And inevitably, even when you're doing stuff that you love, there's pressure and stress. So I wonder how, you know, does that ever become a problem? How do you manage it? How do you sort of try and stop it getting too far for individuals, but also for the team, for you, for the whole company?
We are cognizant of that. And we do work quite stressfully sometimes because, you know, deadlines come to a head and suddenly there's lots of changes but the deadline hasn't changed, etc. So it can be quite stressful. We try and get around that by not working late unless we absolutely have to. If there really is a very tight deadline, normally, you know, people leave, unusually for an agency like ours, you know, we after our sort of afternoon meeting, then, you know, people hop off, which is great. We also do things like we have coffee breaks where we're not allowed to talk about work. And we also have regular yoga exercises. In summer, when we could, we used to have Wellness Wednesdays where we'd every couple of weeks we'd go and do something outside, like it would be rowing a boat or going for a picnic or going to botanical garden or doing something. And I'd pick something for both offices that could work. And then it would just be a question of, you know, unloading that stress and doing something, particularly outside. I'm a big believer of going outside regardless of the weather, because you know, obviously get everyone's buy-in. If people don't want to do it, they don't have to. It's not a dictatorship, but I think it's quite nice to switch off but be with your colleagues in a completely different environment. In fact, we've got a birthday this year, this month, I beg your pardon, where we're turning 7 on the 19th, and we would have all got together, but because of all COVID and the back and forth with what we can and can't do, for now we'll just have a lunch between each office, town. But we will get together and do something. We're debating what that might be, because there's some more adventurous people than others. I'm quite keen to do that zip wire in North Wales, but it gets up to 100 miles an hour. So we have some people who've got fear of heights, so we have to find something that everyone will enjoy. You know, it's about, I suppose, pushing yourself as well. It could just be a hike. It could be something. But we either will meet together somewhere in the middle of the British Isles, or maybe we might go up to Dundee, because I have promised the guys down here that we'll get up to Dundee, and there's so much to do up there. So it'll be travel permitting what we're allowed to do, really. So those things, hopefully that answers your question. It's basically finding ways to decompress, because, yeah, it can be quite stressful. And sometimes, you know, I think I'm quite good at picking up on body language, especially when we have our Zoom calls. And I often pick up when somebody's not, and then I'll call them and say, "Are you okay? You know, what's going on?" And then, you know, they'll sort of tell me, "Oh, you know, what have you? It might be something personal, or it might be work, or what have you." Yeah, my antenna are up for that.
And it can be quite lonely at the top, I mean, even with a wonderful team. So how do you cope yourself? Because it must get very stressful, and you're leading the way in sort of the cutting edge of things. So, you know, you're out there on your own. How do you support yourself or gather people around you to sort of feel supported?
Yeah, it can get lonely at the top. You're quite right. I belong to a few organizations that are either agency related or business founder related. So I kind of am able to sort of share conversations there. I have a very long-suffering husband and kids who I bounce ideas off as well. It's just sometimes all you need is to bounce those ideas off. And when you're saying it yourself, you realize whether that's going to make sense or isn't going to make sense. Obviously, nothing's sort of HR related, but, you know, ideas of what I've got in mind, because I do have quite ambitious ideas about the business. And sometimes I have really crazy ideas about the business. And it's quite nice to sort of be grounded. And from a sort of support basis, before COVID, I would get a bunch of my favorite ladies together for lunches, which you've been included in the past, when you can make it. I know you're very busy yourself.
Yeah, I'm very happy to be part of it.
But that's really lovely, where, you know, we just talk about everything and anything, and in a nice environment, and just over a nice lunch. And that sort of brings you back down to who you are as an individual, rather than a business leader or a mum or a wife or what have you. It's quite nice to just find yourself, really. So easy not to do, and I'm trying to do more of. And I've taken a leaf out of a good friend's book as well. I'm trying to do yoga every morning, and that does help.
And so your crazy ideas, your big ambitions, blue sky thinking, what's the future?
Oh, well, I can't let the cat out of the bag just yet. You'll have to follow us and see what happens. But
so in your imagination, the you know, can you see the way that the technology is going? You know, are we very far away from, you know, stuff that really is kind of life changing, vision changing, storytelling changing?
I think we're there already. For example, there's the mixture between, you know, AR, VR and MR, which is mixed reality, where, you know, with the new kit that you can now use, the, you know, HoloLenses and things like that. I mean, Boeing are using this kind of technology to help technicians fix all the cabling with, you know, the beamed sort of augmented reality. It's already happening. There's so many applications with this technology in real world environments. Digitization of experimental you know, products and product design, whether that be cars or engineering or even medicine, is all done digitally now. And it's using AI to shorten all that expensive testing and in model making and all that kind of stuff. It's all done digitally now. And I think it's fantastic because it means it will get to new things faster and cheaper. So it kind of helps everybody. So it's you know, it's already happening. It's just going to become more commonplace and more sort of in people's everyday environments. But again, in gaming, that all exists already. And even in cars, you've got, you know, the sort of the windscreen dashboards and that kind of stuff. So it's going to be normal very soon. It's still quite new and exciting, but I just think that it's going to be pretty normal. And there'll be new stuff on the horizon.
Yeah, that's the exciting thing, isn't it? And you're kind of looking back over 30 years or so, you know, things that seemed so kind of extraordinary and out there very quickly became normal. And then there would be the next kind of extraordinary thing. And, you know, like the idea of sort of being able to kind of talk to each other, see each other, you know, 10, 15, maybe 20 years ago would have just been so sort of, you know, that was kind of pie in the sky. And here we are chatting without even thinking about it.
Absolutely. I mean, if you think about, you know, watching Star Trek back in the day, you know, beam me up, Scotty, and all this kind of stuff. I mean, the little sort of, you know, things on their chest that they press to talk or get beamed up. I mean, we're not really far off from that anyway. You know, we've got sort of Apple phones and that do everything. And we've got, you know, as you say, the technology on our computers. We kind of, because it happens slowly and gradually, we forget that actually it's incredibly revolutionary and modern what we're using on a day-to-day basis. Because we, as humans, we get used to things so quickly, whether good or bad, that it just becomes, you know, a daily thing, really.
I always wonder with, you know, some things like science fiction, it's the writers who dream up and imagineer the sort of concepts for these things. And then it's the scientists that sort of, and the engineers that come up behind and make it happen. Increasingly, do you think that it's less kind of obvious that it's the sort of imagineers first and the engineers second? Is it more that they're coming together? What do you see from your perspective?
I think back in the day, you know, Jules Verne and those kind of writers were definitely visionaries because what they were imagining definitely didn't exist at all. Whereas nowadays, I think from very young age, youngsters are encouraged to use their imagination and try things. They are digital natives, and so they have absolutely no fear whatsoever of trying stuff digitally. And that's where it's going to go. I do hope that books don't go out the window, though. Actual physical books, I still love those. But I think that, you know, pretty much so much stuff can be digital. And it is so much easier to experiment digitally than it is to have to build up a whole contraption in the real world that I think, you know, I think it's going to be an amalgam of both. And I think that the writers today are, of course, influenced by their day-to-day use of technology. And what I find fascinating is how through the ages, certain themes come into our sort of human psyche and they can happen around the world. So it might be a theme around, I don't know, aliens, or it might be a theme around, I don't know, vampires, or it could be a theme around scientific discovery. We seem to get to the same milestones at the same time around the world for some particular reason. I don't really understand it myself, but I don't know, maybe we're even more joined up than we know we are. But I think that to your question, I think that it really is such an amalgam now of technology and creativity on every sphere that I don't think one will be without the other. But I do admire writers, particularly, say, from the sort of 50s or even before Victorian writers who imagined stuff that was complete, or even, you know, Leonardo da Vinci with his flying machine, I mean, or his tank, or all the stuff that he imagined in those days. I mean, what a visionary. I mean, none of that even exists in people's minds, let alone in the sort of physical space.
So as somebody that is sort of on the cutting edge, you know, you are pioneering, you are out there, you are pushing the envelope. How do you define courage?
I think courage is just gumption. I think that you're having that day in, day out, you know, having a backbone and just getting on with it. That attitude is certainly what got me through this last 7 years. You just have to get up and do it again, you know, and just keep doing it. I think that's sort of my definition of courage. I mean, everyone has a different journey, a different path, and different obstacles and challenges. I've been extremely lucky. My mother always said that I was sort of born lucky. I mean, things seem to happen, fall into my lap. I am a very fortunate person. She did say that all my guardian angels have been put into retirement because they can't handle it. But yeah, I think it's a mixture of luck and making your own luck and going out there regardless. And sometimes it's really shitty and sometimes you really don't feel like doing it. But do it anyway, because you'll be grateful that you tried. Even if you fail, try anyway. Because if you don't take that first step, you'll never do it. So you just have to have gumption, I'd say.
I love that word. That's my word for the day. Thanks, Christine, for bringing the potential of animation into the mainstream of business building and brand awareness, for pushing the possibilities of visual storytelling and problem solving, and for being a leader, a pioneer, and a change maker for others to follow. Thank you so much. It's been brilliant chatting to you.
Wow, thank you, Lou. That's very kind. Thanks for having me.
Take care and see you soon. See you in real life soon.
Yes, can't wait.
Take care. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much, Christina, for showing us that when your passion drives you, you can become a driving force in a field in which you are representing, reflecting, and championing those following in your footsteps. You can find out more about Christina's work on www.salamandra.uk and follow her on Instagram at salamandra.uk. Thanks to Silk Studios for producing and sourcing the guests for the show. And thanks to you all for listening. Take care, choose courage, and see you next week.